Hey everybody, I'm so excited! I have somebody else I love. I'm so happy. Another one of my absolute favorite people on the entire planet. So excited and pumped that she said yes because she was right in the middle of writing her new book that is going to be a ginormous bestseller. And so I sent her an email. I had no idea if she'd make the time for me, but she did because she rocks and she is awesome. And her name is Danielle Laporte, but you already know who she is. I know you know who she is. But here's the deal. We are doing another one of these real and raw off-the-cuff conversations about co-creation, and because Danielle is the desire diva, goddess of the whole planet, cha-ching, we're going to be talking about that or anything else, about how we co-create reality, because you rock. Let's talk.
Let's talk.
Let's just talk. And you have the best teeth, too. I can't stand it. So you talk about desire, and I've been posting your desire map stuff, and you have made a profound impact. You know, when I got to know you, I hadn't read your book yet, so I went and got it. As soon as I met you, I was like really struck by you. You were just like this sparkle, just walking sparkler, and I thought, I need to know who this person is. So after I talked to you, I think I did a reading for you, then I bought your book. Mm-hmm. And I was profoundly moved by it because you talk about such important stuff. When I talk in Uncharted about co-creating reality, this piece is missing for a lot of people. They don't understand the real true nature of desire, how to really get to the core of their authenticity, which is the map you give them. You know, I have the Uncharted map, which is stepping into the unknown, but we also have a map you've made that can help them when they're in the unknown. Mm-hmm. So why did you write the desire map?
Well, the short version of the story is, it goes back to like a New Year's Eve where I was writing out goals like so many of us do for the new year. Mm-hmm. And I was like totally bored. I was so unimpressed by my own goals. And I was just like, this is not inspiring. It's not sexy. And I just started to write some feeling words next to the goals. And yeah, I mean, it was just like any other New Year's Eve. You know, I just had a baby. We were watching TV by the fire with Dick Clark at the time. And it was like, oh, feeling words. And then it kind of changed the energy. And then I wrote them on a post-it note and I put them in my day planner. And that was like, I don't know, that was 12 years ago.
Wow.
And so what I've learned, so jump cut, so the middle of the story is, you know, that turned into this process for getting clear on how you want to feel, which is what I call your core desired feelings.
Yep.
You use that clarity of those core desired feelings, because everything you want to do, let's be really clear, everything you want to do, everything you're eating and bringing into your home and wearing and working and the projects and the vacations and the prayers and everything is because you want to feel a certain way. So I got really clear on that. Why don't you have your bucket list and your day planner and your to-do list and your quarterly objectives and your business plan be sort of the outpouring of those core desired feelings? The feelings are, become the strategy. Changes, it can change everything. I'm definitely not.
Oh, it does change.
But I'm so low hype, right? I'm so tired.
No, I know. We're not hyping.
It'll change your entire life.
No, but it does. It's not about hype. It's about truth.
Yeah.
It's about white hot truth, which just happens to be the name of your next book, because it is true. Every single thing that you said, when I chased my record deal, I wanted to feel a certain way. I wanted to feel the way music made me feel, which was that I felt so influenced and changed by music. When I had my experience and I became a musician, that's what I wanted. I wanted to feel that sense of connection with others and with the music, etc. And I got everything I wanted from something else. I got what I wanted to feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With this work. So, but had I known this, what you talked about, because I didn't know that then. I chased something. I kept wondering, why is it going away from me? And I didn't see all this other stuff that was happening.
Mm-hmm,
it was
mm-hmm.
amazing.
You know, it's so helpful in relationships. You know, like my core desired feelings, like they revolve a bit, but mostly I hang on to like a set of them for a few months. I mean, I had some of them for years. And one of them right now is beloved. And you know, I want to be with my beloved. I want everybody I work with to be beloved. I want to treat everybody as if they're beloveds. And it really helps me in work relationships. Like, you know, you have a meeting with someone and say, I really, this doesn't feel like a beloved relationship. This isn't, this isn't the level of respect or the level of resonance, or it's not fun. Like you, when you're with the, when you're with your homies, you know? So either I have to just like not pursue that, or I have to find a way to manage that. You know, that's another, I have to think more about that. Like, you want to always feel the way you want to feel. How can you manage it so you do get to feel the way you want to feel? And it's like,
you can't always. I think that, I think you can't always, and that's the piece here that I believe that's what you're saying, is the difference between management and detachment in that management, because you can't feel the way you always want to feel. Like, I can't have this kind of rapport with everybody. Like, I just love you, right? So it's just like, I know that when you smile, I feel tingly. Or like, I'm like, I love this girl, I love what she stands for, and I mean it. But I don't feel that way about absolutely every person. So sometimes I have to manage that and go, you know what, okay, I'm not electrically charged by this person, but I can manage my expectations and my own sense of, you know, detachment around this so that I can, so that it doesn't detract from how I want to feel, right? Because then your shadow gets really, let's say you're with somebody that you totally know you don't want to be with, but you have to be with that person. So you don't want your shadow self to get triggered and get locked in. And if it does, well, you have to fall asleep for a second, then wake up again. Because you can't have those poor desired feelings going on all the time. But if you're consistent and if you reinforce it more often than not, the universe, like I say in my book, it's going to mirror it right back to you. Because your feelings are the energy that creates form.
It does. Say that again, your feelings.
Your feelings are the energy. Your feelings, your desired feelings are the energy that's going to help create form. It calls form into being. They are the essence. It's the glue between the essence that is also intellectual. It's thought, imagination. Feeling is the glue. It's the frequency. It's the booster. It's the electricity that sends out there. And if somebody throws you off, or you allow yourself because you have an old commitment to an old story of being a victim or not being enough, or I just interviewed, but I had a conversation with Nancy Levin about her book Worthy, about worthiness, the core worthiness, like how many of us don't feel worthy. So we lose our core desire because it's like we're in a different universe when we're triggered. We just contract. But as long as we remember that we're going to fall asleep at the wheel once in a while, and we wake up. And back to our core desired feelings. We don't go, they're no good anymore, even though they're going to evolve.
Yeah. It's such a great point, because so much in this space is just, you know, that kind of hype vibe. It's really this unattainable goal of you know, self-help perfection, that you're always going to be motivated, that you're always going to be positive. And it just doesn't work that way. It's like, you know, your phrase is great, falling asleep at the wheel.
Narcolepsy is what I call it.
You call it spiritual narcolepsy?
Yeah.
That's good. I like that. You get on the highway and you get off the highway. And then I like to call it creative tension. It's like, you know, and you learn how to steer. And you know, I'm a fan of the Abraham Hicks work. I mean, no teacher is 100% right about everything, but a lot of their stuff. And, you know, they talk about learning through contrast. Yes. So you have to learn what sadness is, to learn what happiness is. Happiness is not the same as joy, by the way. But so contrast. The trick is to wake up faster.
Yes. The recovery time needs to be quicker. And I think this whole, I love that you brought that up about the hype, because, you know, like, okay, so I got hyped up about the desire map because I personally believe that it is a really genuinely great tool for people. But they're not. But it's not a tool that's going to make you stay up awake 24/7. It's a map you can go back to after you wake up again, after you fall asleep at the wheel. You know, and we are. It's impossible for us to be fully ascended. You know, like this whole concept of ascension that I hear being bantered around about, like, we're going to rise above humanity. No, we're not. It's like, no, we're not. We're going to do the best we can. And we're going to make ourselves wake up more often. We're going to make our amends. We're going to learn from that. We're going to then spread some more joy And I feel love with a capital L that is without conditions, that is based on compassion, kindness, appreciation, and care, you know, and then, right? And then our desires, they aren't selfish. It is part of spirit to desire. Mm-hmm. It's that spark in us, right? We're the art, we're the paintbrush, we're the canvas. You know, that desire, when I have a desire to write a song, I don't just write a song because there's a guitar. It's because I have a desire to express myself, mm-hmm. right? That's one of my core desires, is that's never changed, is the desire for expressing truth. And then I might hear myself back going like, ew, that was my truth back then.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So that's why I like what you're talking about too, is that we have to lower our expectations in some way in order to have a higher view of what is possible and have greater potential and possibility when we take off that hyped up perfectionism ascension piece out of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hit on a lot there. Yeah. I mean, the ascension piece, for sure. I've really come to the conclusion, like, I'm just happy to be here now.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be on the ride. I would say for, you know, until I had my son when I was 34, I really, you know, my conversation was around, I want to get this life in and I want to get out of this. I just want off this human wheel, the samsara, you know? Yeah. And then it started to occur to me, you know, maybe this is like one of the best rides in the universe.
Yeah.
And, I'm really happy being human now. I want to be here. And I don't want to ascend. I want to integrate.
Integrate. That's yes. It.
Yes. And, I mean, the other hot thing you said there was love with a capital L. So I, at this point, really think we have barely a clue what love is.
Yeah.
Barely.
I agree.
And, you know, I think everybody can get on board with the Einstein thinking that, you know, we use what, 5, 10% of the human brain. Mm-hmm. I really think that is on par with what we use of our hearts.
Yep.
And I think everybody can get that, you know, the term love is overused and misused. And, but I think many of us go many lifetimes without experiencing, generating, receiving, giving love with a capital L. Mm-hmm. I think we marry people we don't love.
Yep.
I think we do things that we say are loving and they're not. Mm-hmm. And once we get that, then that's the next, excuse the thumb, that next evolutionary leap.
Well, it's funny that you brought that up, because this is something, though, you know, that you're the only person that's actually talked about this, and it is kind of like, it is the shadow side. You know, when I talk about the realm of light, in the book, I talk about the importance of looking at the shadow. Now, I make fun of myself now, because those were very painful moments for me, because I didn't think I was enough. So I had to try to make myself enough by, you know, overdoing yoga classes, not understanding the nature of why it was there for me, not understanding the spiritual piece, although I was, you know, already working as an intuitive, etc., consequently calling myself, you know, so spiritual. And I was a baby. And even today, I'm a baby. I'm always learning. That's how I am. I am learning. I think the wisest people know, and I'm not saying I'm the wisest person, but know that there's always more to learn. And then we have to integrate that.
And you have to always be letting your stuff in the past go. Like,
totally.
I read some things I wrote, and I'm just like, oh, God, Danielle, I can't believe you said that. And, you know, when there's some truth in it, and I like to think I'm not, you know, totally off base. And I think, well, that's where I was then. And that piece, you know, I want to burn everything I ever wrote, except for my current book, because it's not out yet. And then I'll want to burn it after I read it after a couple months. But that will serve somebody with where they're at. If they read my old stuff today, it's going to just ding. It's going to be perfect resonance. And you have to, as a creative, well, not even, I mean, I consider everybody a creative with a capital C, but
I get what you mean, though.
You have to be ego light enough.
Yes.
Egos, but so that you have the courage to change.
That's so important.
To not to not go on your old shtick and your old gimmicks and keep selling the same message because that's what your audience wants. You have to say, this is where I'm at now. And it actually may be contradictory to where I was then, or this is what I want to do now. Or I think the catch is in our business, let's say people in the self-help space, they want to be trusted. We want to be trusted so people buy our stuff. It's not a bad thing.
No.
We want to serve. We want to make a living. And when you're evolving, you run the risk that people aren't going to trust you because you're changing.
Oh, yeah.
And that is what's risky about it. And you just have to be like, well, I was truthful then and I'm truthful now. And I may look totally different 2 years from now. And what you see is what you get. Yeah.
You know, that's a really interesting point. So if we take that and for the everyday person, so let's take what you just said, right, and apply that to anyone, right? So somebody who's watching us talk today, who are on a process of evolution, for example, but their families don't trust them anymore, or their friends are like, you know, the friends look at them and say, you know, we want you to stay this way, and so change and process. Unfortunately, for what you were talking about, really affects the pocketbook, possibly. But your fans change because, you know, you now talk about something different. I remember that happened to me. Like, I took a huge detour when I got, you know, I went through this whole thing that I wanted to be more mainstream and more businessy, etc. Because, because I got scared when I was on Dr. Phil and I had all these crazy people came after me on the internet afterwards. I'm like, I'm done with mediumship. There's enough people to talk to dead people. I'm done with that. Done with that. Talk to the hand. Right? Only I couldn't not be me, right? It was just like, I'm not going to be me. Meanwhile, it's like, I am me, and the dead talk to me, and that's the end of that. Now I have Fred. So, like, bite me, you know what I'm saying? It's just, like, the way it is. And, yes, it's like, when people are looking to purchase something from you or read something of yours, they're going to go, what are they talking about? But that's kind of like, I think we model growth for other people. I think that's how we have to be, is this is my truth today. And if we can look back and say, you know, this is where I was at the time, and here's how I turned the ship around, and then here's this. I don't think you end up, when you're as truthful as you are, you know, it doesn't really matter. The people will find you. I think the people will, but also the same thing, not about business. It's if a person is going through this and they get judgment from other people, or they're scared, they will. That's the thing. You are going to lose people.
Yeah.
And you got to be okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, I mean, this is the work in light worker. Like, it's not easy. You lose friends, you take financial risk, relationships end, things become more, there's more friction.
Yep.
And, semicolon, oh, fulfillment,
yes.
Joy, creativity, divine protection, clear thinking, vitality, energized, you sleep better at night, your digestion, your skin clears up. Like, you know, the rewards to doing the work of being yourself and turning that into service are infinite. And that you will get to a point where you can't, it's the most beautiful confusion. You can't tell the difference between your giving and receiving. It's such a pleasure. It's such a pleasure to be generous.
And it's worth it. You just actually said exactly, I'm telling you, I couldn't have made you up. Just, I couldn't have dreamt that up. I couldn't have paid you to say that. That is like so, that is the truth, which is that willingness and what we gain from it. And I think what you just described is when we are really coming from our soul. Because our soul knows what's best for us. Our soul knows what's authentic for us, why we are here. What kind of art we're supposed to create if we just let it in, right? It's always there.
But it doesn't, our soul doesn't mean it's suffering free.
Oh, hello.
I want it to be suffering free. I mean, I'm really trying to get to this place. Like, for years I've been saying, I don't think suffering is essential to growth. And now I'm like,
change my mind about that.
It's kind of unavoidable.
You were young. You were, every young person believes that.
Fuck suffering. I'll turn to Alan Watts for this one. One of my favorite Zen drunk philosophers. There will always be suffering. We must not suffer over the suffering. Yeah. And that's it. It's like...
Do you know that suffering means to undergo a journey? That's what it means, to undergo a journey. That's what it means. Sin means to miss the mark. That's what it means. It comes from a Greek word, to miss the mark, and suffering is to undergo a journey. And so without the dark, listen, my best songs were written when I was pensive and I was, you know, sad. Oh, yeah. And
heartbreak is great for material.
Yeah. And then
it's happy now. I don't know what I'm going to write about.
Yeah. And then joy. It's like joy. I know. The other day I was looking at my husband, looking at my beautiful home and my dogs and just my life right now. And I'm like, I am joyful, not for what I have, but it's a kind of gratitude that,
yes,
that I can see the spirit in everything. And that it's just this, it's, I don't know how to put it. It's not a personal feeling. It's a feeling of awe and reverence is what it is.
Yes.
Right. And that's, yes, And so, but I didn't get here without suffering. Oh my God. I mean, just the other day I was suffering over my character flaws, right? You know, my people pleasing is enough to make me want to gang and get on my knees and go, I can't believe I don't want to feel bad and they don't like me. You know, like, I have stuff. I have a list. I have a list that follows me around. I get it. My bag lady goblin wakes up. Chicken Little wakes up, you know, and then I got to calm everybody down, you know, like, we're good. But, you know, it's I don't get what I want. You know, the big TV station I really wanted for my show passed on me the other day. It was like, I didn't sit there going, don't they know who I am? No, for a minute I was really super disappointed. But then I was like, you know what? Spirit has a plan. Spirit is a plan. Better than my idea. Form is not it's not my deal. But I've suffered over, you know, a bazillion things. My dog dying. That was horrifying. I couldn't fix, you know, it's like, anyway, I'm just trying to find reasons to talk about suffering. But we know what we're talking about. We know what suffering means. Everybody knows how to suffer.
Everybody knows how to suffer. But suffer well.
Yes.
Suffer well. Suffer with this from the perspective of the soul. That, you know, what's really helped me is, well, a couple things. One, at the end of it, when I can't find anything good or positive and why this is happening, it's the old Buddhist prayer, may my suffering be of service.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel helpful to me right now, but I'll get through this and somehow I'll serve somebody else through this, or maybe even on the, like, morphogenic field, this suffering is going to help somebody else. So there's that. But also, I look now at suffering as more of a cleansing.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm really burning off the dross of my, that's hanging around my soul. And
it's a pointer. I think it points out to us as to what we need to heal. You
yeah.
know, I think that it's also it's a call for, you know, they say in the Course in Miracles, it's either love or a call for love. And yeah. I used to be like, ah. I was also, you know, well, you know, like, because I was in this perfectionist, I'm going to get rid of all my character flaws right now. Thank you very much. I'm doing my inventory. That's not going to happen for me. Oh, that person is 15 years sober and they're having a bad time. They must not be doing the right things. This is me 30 years ago thinking that I was going to achieve ascension and do whatever else. And like that spiritual materialism,
yes,
right? There's a,
yes.
And I had to go there to really get humble. That you really get humble and go, okay, this is not how it works.
That is not how it works.
Not how it works.
Yeah. And the judgment of, I mean, I've so been there. It's like, she's still sick. She's still dealing with that. And then you go through something chronic.
Yeah.
And you know, and I've research this specifically as, like, you know, many, many highly enlightened individuals have suffered horribly physically.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many gurus died of brain tumors. And, you know, one of my favorites, Krishnamurti, chronic migraines and cancer. These are people who healed, fully healed other people.
Yeah.
But the soul has its plan and
yeah.
the soul wants, it will give you what you need. And, you know, and I have an even bigger point of view now, which is I just think in a twisted way, kind of, well, good for them. You know, good for them for taking that suffering on. Not that that's what it's about at all, but it's just like, What a strong soul to do that. What an amazing being to sign up for that. Maybe this is a lifetime. This whole lifetime is about the kind of purification that can only come from agony that we're all going to experience at one in one lifetime or another. And then, you know, and if that's truth, then, you know, the reverse is true. You see people who, they just have it really easy this lifetime. And you think, are they real? You know, do they need to suffer to get to their depths, to be a whole person?
And maybe not.
No, maybe not.
That's why comparison is so dangerous.
This is their get out of jail free card lifetime. They burned it. They did it. And they get to coast. Just no judgment for none of it. Like, for the coasters and the toasters. And you just cannot see the machinations of somebody's soul. So just focus on your own project.
Yeah. And go out and co-create an amazing reality. And I think this is. I want to say thank you so much. I mean, I could talk to you for 2 more hours, but, like, this is good. Thank you, Danielle Laporte. You rock.
Uncharted. Love to everybody with a capital L.
L, capital. Yay!